Ladies and gentlemen, just a skosh past the top of the hour. Hello, good morning, and welcome to the, well, technically the fourth Thursday this month. It's supposed to be the third Thursday Tech Show. It is the fourth Thursday Tech Show tonight. One engagement only. Remember to tip your waitresses. Jones here. I'm once again having allergy issues with my throat. At least I've been able to figure out that it was the allergies. At any rate, we've got a bunch of stuff to begin with tonight, but I got to tell you, there's no way that I can begin tonight without acknowledging the unbelievably foolish behavior of one Beto O'Rourke for a group of people gathered together to mourn and to more or less have a vigil for the kids who got killed in Uvalde, Texas. And Beto O'Rourke decided he was going to use their pain, their suffering, their angst for his own political profit. I mean, there's no way that anybody come up to the stage and say anything that will heal those broken hearts. But watching the way Beto O'Rourke did this, it was revolting, it was sickening, it was nauseating. I've seen some revolting, sickening, and nauseating things in my life. Beto O'Rourke proved he has no class, no taste. He's got nothing. And he demonstrated his complete lack of appreciation, respect, or understanding of the American people in particular, and the Texas people in general. And the looks on the faces of the people he was confronting, this in one of the big auditoriums here in the school. He's up there screaming at Governor Abbott that another shooting's going to happen unless you do something. Which is actually a fairly safe statement to make, I should imagine. I thought let's hear some of this so you can hear how outrageous this was. Let me make you say this happened about 3 minutes into the press conference?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, folks, Mr. McWilliams is close by, as you can obviously tell. We're in the same room for a change.
Yeah, it's very close today.
Yes, okay, so here we go. In 3, 2.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me.
Sit down.
You're out of line and an embarrassment. Hey.
That was Ted Cruz telling him to sit down.
Yeah, he was in the back.
But up on the front row are the Lieutenant Governor, the Governor, a host of other people, and a whole bunch of folks, including the mayor of Uvalde standing in the background. He's about to use some pretty rough language, but I'm going to leave it in because it's a historical note.
Yes.
So here we go. Let's continue.
Sir, you're out of line.
Please leave this auditorium. I can't believe you're a sick son of a bitch that would come to a deal like this to make a political issue.
So that's pretty much how it sounded. We give you the raw and edited footage so you can judge for yourself. I do not understand what drives people, first of all, to kill people like that. But for Beto O'Rourke to nakedly politicize and attempt to profit politically from this pain and suffering of the people, it's just gross.
Man. Well, this is not the first time he's done this. Remember, he's from El Paso. And a couple of years ago, there was a shooting in El Paso in a Walmart.
Yes, sir.
And at that time, he was running for Senate against Ted Cruz.
Yes, Ted Cruz, right.
And he was out on the campaign trail, and word got back to him that there was a shooting. And he dropped everything, got on a plane, and got there as fast as he could. And the first thing he did was he found somebody from CNN with a camera, and they followed him around the city talking to the camera about, taking guns and...
Oh, I remember this. This is about the same time he was saying, hell yes, we're going to take AR-15. Hell yes, we're going to take your AK-47.
Yeah, that was at one of the debates. But right. This was him out in the streets talking about Trump and all these things and trying to make himself look good. And he's getting all this airtime up to about an hour's worth. And I don't know how that played with the rules as far as, can he do that or whatever. But he used it and milked it to be able to make himself look good in the tragedy of all these people dying in a Walmart. So this is nothing new for him.
So Tuesday, he comes scurrying like a cockroach off under the table at the news of an elementary school shooting in Uvalde that led to the death of 22 people, including 19 kids and 2 teachers, and happily the gunman. And here he comes, doing everything he can do to profit from this. Was it who was Obama's chief of staff that said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
That was Rahm Emanuel.
Thank you, sir.
The Romulan. And there was a gentleman that was on the floor, I think it was yesterday, that was going off. I thought he was a Republican, but he's actually a Democrat. And talking about, you know, how much money here and how long is this going to take? And, you know, it's the same old thing. And basically, Beto was there from what the there's two reporters, one of them from CBS News, said basically he was spewing the exact same things that this person said on the floor in the House.
A little casual plagiarism.
Yes, a little casual plagiarism. And those two people that were there, they basically said that, yes, this was staged. It was fake. And what was funny about that, one of them was a reporter from CBS News.
Oh, really?
Actually said, yeah, what he did was fake. It was staged.
Wow, man, the guy is truly a lowlife.
And coming from CBS News, that's...
Well, you know, I thought Adam Schiff was truly lowlife and that little bug-eyed weirdo, but man, this just takes the cake.
Yeah. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know if he was trying to score points. I think it's going to turn a lot of people away, except for maybe the people that he has in his core. But that's also going to be used between both sides. One's going to say, well, Beto's an idiot. And the other one, well, Beto stood up to Governor Abbott. You know, you'll see that, I'm sure, running around until November.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this, about how to prevent something like this. There are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of similar classrooms in beautiful schools all over our country. Filled with gorgeous kids and dedicated teachers. I mean, everybody knows this. And we can armor up the schools. We can train teachers to shoot to kill. We can adjust the legal netting so it supports this kind of thing. But the truth of the matter is, in this will only happen in 1/10 of 1% of the schools. The rest of the schools will armor up for nothing. And it's probably hard to get people through the school boards to spend the money it takes to do this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of third-party companies that will go into schools, you know, for a fee to be able to beef them up and everything. And I saw, I think it was after the shooting, the Marjorie something or other with the kid.
Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Right. And there was a company that actually set up a mock school. And one of the CNBC reporters was in there, and it showed everything from the time he got through the door, had smoke and all these things to distract him to where he wouldn't be able to get to anybody. I mean, just made his life a living hell for him to try to get to point A to point B. And you spend millions of dollars for this kind of stuff, and it's a matter of, well, some can afford it and some can, depending on the school district.
Yeah, but the truth of the matter is that the number of school districts that we can armor up is limited. And the number that will ever actually need this, thank God, is pretty small.
And even in that case, I mean, it doesn't cost that much to teach people how to use a gun and be trained in the event that something like this happens, that they're able to, like, try to hold them off until the police arrive. But, again, people out there don't want them being armed. That's not what teachers do. And then, of course, the liberals all want to get in there and say, oh, but you want to have,
sure,
you know, CRT in these kids learning, but they can't defend themselves. Quite fascinating.
And that's the thing that always strikes me so weird. I mean, it's just as predictable as the sun rising in the east. You have people, children, 8, 9, 10 years old, who are incredibly vulnerable. And rather than make them less vulnerable, the big arguments from the know-it-all honchos like Obama and Biden and whoever else, their answer to this is to make all the adults more vulnerable. I just find that amazing.
I do too. And it doesn't take that much to have people come in. I mean, there's law enforcement has said, you know what, we'll train you. We'll do it out of our pocket. Because they want people in there that are doing it right. And if a time does come, you'll be able to protect yourselves or at least hold the people back until help arrives.
Yes.
And it's not that costly. And they're having the same things with churches, because there's a lot of church shootings. And a lot of them are coming in and teaching people how to be able to defend themselves.
One thing I wanted to make a point of. I had read that a Border Patrol agent was being credited with smoking this guy in Uvalde, Texas. And I finally found a source for this. An anonymous law enforcement guy told the AP that an agent with BORTEC, Border Patrol Tactical, rushed into Robb Elementary without waiting for backup, shot and killed the bad guy. He apparently went in with his technical group and with other agents. They formed a stacking maneuver. All Texas law enforcement was engaged with the shooter, who was barricaded. They came in from opposite sides and exchanged gunfire and got him. And that's these guys, this Border Patrol tactical team just happened to be nearby?
I guess so.
Wow.
Well, they have a lot there because the Mayor Uvalde, who is, my understanding, Republican, they actually voted.
First one in a long time.
Yeah. And he's been a lot of talk shows up here and stuff. One of the things he's talked about is that they have Border Patrol there because they're having a lot of the immigrants coming in and trashing the places. They break in to steal stuff to take with them because they need food or whatever. And they're cutting the fences to let others in. So there's a lot of them up there that are patrolling and trying to get them and take them and to wherever it is they take them to.
I was continually surprised, though, at the number of tactical guys, I guess everybody puts on their tac gear and runs out to where the event is. But I was very pleased with the number of people that got there so quickly. I thought they did a fantastic job.
Well, there's now a lot of stuff that's coming out today about wanting to take 90 minutes, I think they were saying, for people to get on site and stuff. As far as the overall structure of it, I don't know how the mayor is going to handle that. But I like the fact that this guy, he's not taking any prisoners. He's taking care of his people. And, of course, you saw what happened when Beto showed up.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was going to punch him.
I wish somebody had. I mean, I'm sure that's politically incorrect. But the only reason guys like Beto do stuff like that is because they have no credible threat of consequences. None.
I'd punch Beto. I'm willing to take the hit and pay the fine.
He'd probably cry.
I don't care. I'll be happy sitting in jail for 48 hours. I hate people like that.
So noted. This just in. Rick Williams in elevator with the Beto O'Rourke.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is USA Radio, 844 Radio US. We're glad to have you. We'll start the tech show in just a moment. Stay close. Okay, I got a question for you. I told you that Audi's about to introduce a new moon robot called the Audi Lunar Quattro. How'd that grab you, huh? And of course, you know, sooner or later this is going to take place. On the Apollo program, we took a car to the moon that folded up and fit beautifully inside the lunar lander. And so apparently Audi, actually North American Audi, at the auto show in Detroit, debuted a brand new lunar rover that makes use of the Audi's famous Quattro all-wheel drive system. And who would think that that'd be light enough to fly in space? But apparently it is. It's called the Audi Lunar Quattro. And better yet, the little robot is 3D printed, comprised of titanium and aluminum.
Wow.
Man, that's got Elon Musk written all over it, doesn't it? I would love to have one of those. Because see, what's happening is, Musk is kind of bridging the divide between space exploration and automobiles with his two companies, SpaceX and Tesla. So I guess the next thing is to put an Audi Lunar Quattro on board the Starship and send that to the moon. Well, that sounds like fun. And I wonder what the incentive was for all this stuff. Well, it turns out Audi's partnered with a Berlin-based part-time scientist to manufacture this lunar rover. We've already tested the robot in rough terrain all around the world. And the cool thing is the entire project is part of the Google Lunar XPRIZE. You heard of this? The Google Lunar XPRIZE?
Yeah.
An initiative first launched back in 2007 comes with a $30 million prize. All you have to do is incentivize space entrepreneurs and create a whole new era of affordable access to the moon and beyond. So along comes the Audi Lunar Quattro. Multiple cameras, solar panel, prominent Audi. Of course, the prominent Audi logo is a big deal. And there are 15 other contestants in the challenge. Ready to get this thing slated for the 2022 liftoff. It was originally supposed to fly in 2017, but it didn't get around to it. That's just so typical of space programs. Yeah, it's a 6-month program, we got 4 months, 3 months, 2 months, and then suddenly it's 6 months again. Anyway, once it does get to the moon, the Quattro will be controlled entirely by a control center here on Earth. And they hope they can make it move 500 meters along the lunar surface, because they have to be very careful because it's easy to run over stuff. So there you have it, the Audi Lunar Quattro. And the picture here is actually pretty cool. And yes, as you might well have guessed, the Audi logo is quite prominent. The four-linked rings, you know, those.
Right.
All right. So, Mr. Mick, what you got, son?
Well, I've also got a thing that came out this week, and that they have picked the first female chief flight director to join NASA's Gateway leadership. And Gateway is the small space station that they're trying to develop that will orbit the moon.
Wasn't Gateway the name of the place where Sam Ripley woke up in Aliens?
Might be. I haven't seen it in a while, so sounds possible. So Holly Riding, she's the first female chief of NASA's flight directors, will now help lead the agency's Gateway program, an international partnership to establish humanity's first space station around the moon. She'll serve as the deputy program manager, while she will lead teams to build and launch NASA's foundational infrastructure in deep space. She became chief flight director in 2018, leading the NASA human spaceflight operations for the first commercial crew missions, the International Space Station, to prepare for the upcoming Artemis 1 mission.
Mick, can I ask a question here?
Yeah.
What kind of a qualification is being female for space travel?
I don't know.
They act like it's a great big qualification, and I'm sure they're proud they've hired a woman, but how much will NASA spend on her purse, I wonder?
I'm not going there. I'm not going there. But, you know, there's gonna be barriers that are broken. We've done it in this shuttle and everything else. So it's time to have all kinds of people on the moon.
You're talking about a pregnancy flat suit? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I didn't know about that one.
Ladies and gentlemen,
next to the purse.
You listen to USA Radio. This is our third Thursday of the month. Well, it's obviously the fourth Thursday of the month tech show. We're glad to have you. We'll be back in just a moment at 844 Radio US. Stay close. I love talking about space stuff. Because in this day and age of school shootings and Biden and Pelosi and the rest of us folks, it's so great to elevate your gaze above the smudged handiwork of man, like the beautiful handiwork of the Almighty. It's great stuff. And I dig checking out the technology that we use to go to space. I was a really cool gadget that the Marshall Space Flight Center's website. They developed a remote sensing and mapping system called the Kinematic Navigation and Cartography Knapsack. Get the Kinematic Navigation, KN, and Cartography Knapsack, KNAC. Uses mobile LiDAR scanners to create ultra-high resolution maps in real time as an astronaut walks across the surface of the moon. So is this a really expensive form of breadcrumbs? I don't know.
But, sounds like it.
But the gear can make millions of measurement points per second. It can also be used for navigation to improve safety for astronauts crossing the lunar surface on foot or in a rover. So just think of it as it's kind of like a fully automated and, may I say, beautiful knapsack with a great big antenna on it. And obviously they've designed this for use in the upcoming Artemis missions. Which will feature the first crewed, meaning people, not C-R-U-D-E, but C-R-E-W-E-D. First crewed lunar landing since 1972. And it's currently carried in a backpack. The plan is to incorporate it into a small device that can attach to an astronaut's helmet. Oh, man, is that slick. I expect this little knapsack gadget, or this helmetized gadget, to play an important role in lunar missions. The astronauts will be exploring the moon's south pole, which is in deep shadow almost all the time. That's where they're expecting to find the water. Because we've overflown those craters that are in shadow almost all the time, and there's liquid water, ice water at the bottom of it. It's something. So I was wondering exactly what they're going to be seeing here. And they say basically the sensor is a surveying tool for both navigation and science mapping. able to create ultra high resolution 3D maps at centimeter level precision. Wow. So leverage scientific context. And they make the point that this will be useful on the moon because you can insert markers into the mapping to help you remember where you are. See, on Earth, we use stuff like building the trees for our landmarks. We remember them.
Right.
But the moon is really kind of boring. So astronauts will use this backpack gadget to determine their movement, direction, and orientation. And Mick, I guess it'd be really easy to get lost.
On the moon?
Well, if the only landmark you have is a mountain that's 10 miles away, your relationship, you know, where you're standing in relationship to the mountain becomes an issue.
Yeah, and they all look a lot alike, too. The 10 mile looks as much as the 20 mile.
There you go. So anyway, they've already tested this gadget on Earth to map an ancient volcanic crater in New Mexico. And also to create, get this, a 3D reconstruction of the 6-mile-long sea barrier dunes at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Man, that's beautiful. So now they're going to try to miniaturize the hardware, make it small, make it robust enough, small enough, and energy efficient enough to find space. That's great. Okay, that's what I got. What do you got?
Well, the Starliner, which is Boeing's craft, went up last weekend, I think it was, and had a dummy on board and a bunch of a cargo, and actually docked at the space station. And today, they undocked, and 4 hours later, it landed safely in the New Mexico desert.
No kidding.
Yep. And they said the craft worked very well. The only problem they had found that there was, I guess, decal paint or something that had caused the sensors to run properly. So they had to adjust that. And basically, it went through autonomously, docked without any problems.
Man, if the only problem you're having is that the decals are kind of flappy, man, you're doing good.
Yeah. And so they had a female mannequin that was...
Oh, just like Ripley for in the Musk crewed flight, yeah.
Right. And use that to telemetry and get data and stuff. And then it came back along with the...
pressure, temperature, G's, all that stuff.
Yep. And they landed in New Mexico and everything was good.
And that sounds great.
So hopefully we'll get more data on it. And maybe they'll get able to put it on top of the SLS, you know, that's still...
I mean, they might actually launch the SLS.
Yeah.
And actually fly it. Gosh, what a concept. That's this one thing about... it's really great, I think, about being alive right now. For a space nerd like me, because before, NASA was the only game in town. Now you got the little weird-looking rocket from Bezos. You got Boeing.
Weird-looking
rocket. It's a weird-looking rocket. I'm sorry, it is.
WLR.
There you go. And you got the incredible work that Elon Musk is doing. This is a fantastic, it's not completely, but it's almost the golden age of space exploration.
Yeah, it is. And I like the fact that they're spreading it around, the contracts and things, instead of just being the regular
people that have been there before when NASA was doing Apollo. And I'd sit there and I'd listen to, you know, the flight director at NASA putting Boeing down because they couldn't get their stuff together, and turned around and smacked him and said, well, thank goodness for SpaceX, because we wouldn't be able to do all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And he really drilled them into the ground. So hopefully they're redeeming themselves now and being able to fly proper.
Well, they certainly should be, because Elon Musk has, all we had to do is get the government out of the launch business and get some hard-nosed, money-grubbing guys to get in there and say, look, we can do this on a budget. We're going to do it on a budget. NASA's biggest problem has always been their unlimited budget, I think.
Yeah.
Because if this doesn't work, we'll try something else tomorrow. They didn't have to make it work. And Musk guys had to make it work. They were going to go broke if they didn't. And that kind of pressure, that kind of incentive, that kind of focus, and there's nothing like it.
One thing I don't like that's been going on since Bezos and Branson's been flying and everything, is all of them are saying, oh, well, these rich people and their toys, you know, going back and forth to space, need to pay their taxes.
Oh, like come this. On. That's so jealous.
Oh, it gets better. They're now having
there was an article come out, I think it was in USA Today or something, are now saying that the propellants and stuff that they use to go back and forth are toxic and can render climate change and all of this stuff.
Oh, come on.
And I'm like, look, you're just jealous because the guys paid money, did something, and you know what? It goes back and forth, and they're learning from it to do better as we get out into space. You know, it's not NASA doing it. It's Bezos and all these others.
Learning
and
by doing.
Right. And they're going to have better ships and better fuels.
Learning by doing. Else. What a concept. I mean, who'd thought that?
But they just want to be mean and pick and everything. I was like, fine. Then, you know, when the time comes that you're going to need stuff from space or whatever, whether it be minerals to keep the place running, now don't come crying to me because they did the work and all these little quarterbacks sitting back, you know, going, climate change.
It truly floors me what an excuse climate change has been for everything that you want to do. We can't do this because of climate change. We can't do that because of climate change. And what is climate change? What's climate change? It's whatever you want it to be at the moment.
Well, that 17-minute dissertation that Sanders gave in the Senate, he was upset about money going to Ukraine to protect him, not because of Putin, is because, well, that'll take money away for climate change stuff. And I'm like, you're an idiot.
And what has climate change done? What's it hasn't done anything?
No. I mean, it's climate.
There's supposed to be all these islands sinking and all this other stuff. And from what I can read, the sea level has changed about a quarter of an inch in the last 30 years. That's tiny.
I think you were talking about the polar bears and the ice still here.
Oh, yeah.
That was last night.
Polar bears are supposed to be in such trouble. There are more polar bears. The polar bear population is the largest now that it's ever been. Ever.
They're using the ice floats to get together and build an armada to go find the other female polar bears.
Trying to build a deck, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just to socialize. But tell you one thing I did run across, though, since we're doing tech. I ran across something Barnes & Noble just done. Remember the what was that Barnes & Noble thing called? The Nook?
Yeah.
Barnes & Noble has just taken the wraps off a budget version of the Nook. It's called the Nook Glowlight 4, an e-book reader that they launched. Now, I understand my wife has one of these. And when she wants to read at night, it doesn't keep me awake. And it's really pretty cool, an illuminated book. But I'm so spoiled by my talking books.
Yeah, Audible's nice, especially when you're driving.
Oh, buddy, driving, sleeping, any time.
The only problem I have with those, it's another device that I have to pay for and take the chance of it getting lost, stolen, or damaged.
Yep.
I can go down anywhere and grab the Kindle app, put it into this tablet, put it into this phone,
and there you are,
and have all my Kindle books. Now, Google's been getting weird lately because because they are shutting down the capability for other devices to be able to have Kindle books. The first problem I had was I have to go into an Android device to purchase a book, and then when I use my iPad Kindle app, it'll see it in the library and bring it down. They won't let you purchase them on the iPad because Apple's protecting their store.
Oh, come on.
And so now Google's coming back and fighting with Amazon and all of them, everything. And they were like saying, well, you have it in this particular app and we don't want it there anymore. We want you to put it over here. And there's all these little things now. And then people are getting upset because they can't get to their books on the device of their choice. And they don't want to buy another device just for the point of being able to read those books.
That's amazing.
And it's just a bunch of crap.
You'll never go rogue by, you'll never underestimate, no, you can never overestimate the willingness to be cheap of some of these great big billion-dollar companies. They're so cheap and so chicken, you know what, and such skinflints.
Yeah.
Cheapskates, man. Just saying that.
And some of my books have pictures in them. Some of them have charts and graphs. And so it's nice to have them on the pad so you can kind of blow them up and be able to see what you're looking at versus a phone. But there's times when I want to buy something. Maybe I don't have the phone with me. And it says, oh, sorry, you're not available to, you know, privileges to be able to buy this on this device. So I got to jump to another device to buy it so that all of the other devices see it.
Yeah. And this 6-inch Nook Glowlight 4E, unveiled on Wednesday by Barnes & Noble, retails for $120, and that's $30 cheaper than the Nook Glowlight 4. They did this whole bit of rigmarole for a $30 price difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do people buy these Nook book readers, are they really that limited in their stuff?
Well, both them and the Kindle Fires are kind of limited. I think between the two of them, the Nook is definitely more limited. Plus, they were doing a deal with Microsoft back in the day to make them a little more less proprietary.
Yeah.
And, of course, was the other one, Borders, I think, had some stuff, but they died some years ago.
Yes, they did, and deservedly so.
And then the Fire is great for what it does, but it can be such a pain. Because if you want to go out and pay bills, you want to use apps that are similar that you use on your iPad or your Android.
Sure.
They make it very hard because the whole point of them being there is not to make your life easy. It's to sell you stuff. And people don't understand that and say, well, I get all my stuff here. But when they want to use it like we do normally, they fight with it or there's not an app available for that.
Well, and reading that there's only $30 difference between the two, I thought there's got to be more to it than this.
Yeah.
So I did some digging. First up, this new ebook reader comes with 8 gigs of onboard storage, while the $30 more one offers 32. Now that's significant right there. 32 is a lot. And although even with 8 gigs, you can still load up a ton of books. But 32 is much nicer. And then there's this, the Lowlight 4E, the new one. It's 4E, I think, means inexpensive. Also has a slightly inferior display, offering 212 dots per inch compared to 300 dots per inch with the Lowlight 4. And they did try to cut glare and all that other stuff. And the battery life, Barnes & Noble says the new one, the charge will last for weeks, and the $30 more one will run for approximately a month. That's one charge a month. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And I believe they also have an app. So if you want to use Barnes & Noble for your books instead of Kindle, I think they have an app that you can put on other devices as well and be able to use those books that you have.
Yeah, if they're smart, they'll make it possible to browse the store on this thing too. Don't you think?
Yeah, that too. Because you go to the store a lot of times, you can't find the book you're looking for. Especially if it's conservative writers.
Well, yeah, you know, I know where they are. They're in the back of the store.
Exactly.
with all the covers turned away from the perspective.
Yeah, so you can't see them.
But that's one thing that I come back to again and again. The Barnes & Noble, near my home, they have done their very best to make you as uncomfortable as possible. They used to have a lot of old floppy chairs. And some of the chairs are pretty greasy and some weren't.
You had a little place where you could read and they had coffee.
Yeah,
it was Seattle's best, I think it was.
Yeah, you had a reading nook. You had a place where you could get good coffee. It was a great place to go to be a bit. And we always bought something. Yeah, I'd get a whole pile of books and I'd buy one or two of them. But as they've taken away the comfortable places and I have to sit on a hard chair, I find I'm not nearly as amenable to buying something. And so my buying has actually gone down, even though the time that's been in the store is about the same.
And they wonder why their numbers go down.
Ain't that the darndest thing? Well, I always say, better is the enemy of good.
The Spanish Inquisition comes in with a comfy cushions.
Nobody expects a Spanish
Inquisition. You might buy some.
Folks, we'll be right back. Please stay close. This is the USA Radio Network. Hello, good morning, and welcome to the broadcast. I got a question. Have you ever thought you caught your boss breaking some law, and you took your smartphone out of your pocket, and he told you that you can't record him at work? Well, get this. On Thursday, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that upscale grocer Whole Foods cannot forbid employees from recording conversations or taking photographs at work without a supervisor's permission. Now, the caveat on this, I don't know what all the local laws are, so your local laws might be different, you might differ. But the center of this case were stipulations in Whole Foods General Information Guide, an employee manual laying out worker do and don'ts. The guide prohibited workers from taking photos or recording conversations inside a store unless prior approval was received.
I was in certain companies, I recorded meetings. I recorded Bad Managers, too.
Nice work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, the NLRB says you can do it. So that smartphone in your pocket might be your best friend. Because I've seen plenty of radio management people that say one thing to your face and say something completely different in the memo from the meeting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you had to do something about that. Of course, now, I look at this whole report here. No word yet on whether the NLRB will let you tape and record audio and video and the bathrooms work. I don't think you can do it there. But good grief. So your employer can't stop you from recording conversations at work. There you have that.
Good.
Of course, now I got this from the Huffington Post. So consider the source. All right, 844 Radio US. That's 844 Radio US. Mick, where do you want to go?
Oh, let's see. I've seen a couple of things.
While you work on that, I've got a good one here. Now, we all know that our smartphone batteries are bad because they don't last the whole day, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Turns out it's partially our fault because we've been charging them wrong the whole time.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I found this over to ScienceLearn.com. Many of us have an ingrained notion that charging your smartphone in small bursts will cause long-term damage to the batteries, and it's better just to charge them when they're close to dead. But that turns out that may not be right. In fact, I found a website from battery company Kadex called Battery University Details. And it details how lithium-ion batteries for smartphones are sensitive to their own versions of stress. And just like with people, extended stress can be damaging to your smartphone battery's long-term lifespan. Now, how are we supposed to know you're not supposed to stress your phone battery? So basically, if you want to keep your battery in top condition and go about your day without worrying about battery life, you need to change a few things. Now, I got this at Battery University. Don't you love the way that sounds?
Battery University.
Yeah. According to Battery University, leaving your phone plugged in when it's fully charged, like overnight, it's bad for the battery in the long run. I didn't know this. I mean, I've got a sleep app that I use with my iPhone.
Yeah. I leave mine plugged in at night to keep it charged.
Me too. I mean, once it's reached 100% charge, it gets trickle charges to keep it 100%. While it's plugged in, it keeps the battery in a high stress, high tension state, which wears down the chemistry in the battery.
But I don't like it dying in the middle of the night, and then I wake up with no alarm or being able to call anybody, and I have to wait for it to recharge.
Correctamundo. I'm skipping on the page here because there's a whole bunch of scientific details to explain why this works. But they've got a very nice summation at the end of all this. There's all this scientific rigmarole, and there's this. When fully charged, move the battery from its charging device. This is like relaxing muscles after strenuous exercise. So it's like putting down the dumbbells after you reach a good pump.
You don't want to carry them to the kitchen table.
Correct. And then they also say, It's a good idea not to charge your battery to 100%. Lithium ion does not need to be fully charged, nor is it desirable to do so. In fact, it's better not to fully charge because a high voltage stresses the battery and wears it away in the long run. Of course, who's not telling me this? People that sell batteries.
Who are all giving grants to Battery University.
There you go. And the charging phone will lose 10% of its charge would be the best case scenario. It's not practical for most people, but it'd be best. So let's just put this way. Everything you know is wrong, okay?